This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome into White Sox Weekly, March 22nd, 2025 edition. I am Jeff Meller. A lot of news coming down, and probably most importantly, though, the big item on the agenda today. We are under a week away from real baseball for the White Sox. The home opener at Wrigley Field against the Angels coming this Thursday, 5 days away. Cannot wait. It's going to be a fantastic, fantastic day. No doubt, I can already smell the grilled onions as I walk into Wrigley Field. It'll be fantastic. So hopefully you can join us. Traditions start here. Join us back at Wrigley Field for opening day on March 27th as we take on the Los Angeles Angels at 3:10 p.m. For more information and to secure your tickets, visit whitesox.com/openingday. You're going to want to be there. Now, Sean Burke, we officially have the news, will be your opening day starter for the Chicago White Sox. I thought this was pretty cool, as is kind of what you do nowadays. If you're a professional sports franchise, you have to be on top of all the big moments. You want to have cameras ready to go. And so at spring training, Will Venable, Ethan Katz had Sean Burke in their office, and they broke the news to him.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Good. I'm good.
You know, the other part of it is who's our opening day starter, and it couldn't be more excited to name you our opening day starter. All right. And so, congratulations, dude. You just crushed it this camp. The way that you just take care of your business, your presence, your professionalism, you like to pitch in the cold, right? So, like, let's go. Let's do it, man. Could not be happier for you, man. You are so, so deserving. So, congratulations. Okay.
Pretty cool moment there. We didn't get a lot from Sean Burke, but don't worry, I've got you covered. Sean Burke's going to be joining me next segment here on White Sox Weekly. We'll talk to him. We'll pick his brain. I did record that on Friday with him, Friday afternoon, right before his last spring training warm-up before opening day. So we'll pick his brain, talk about what it means to be the opening day starter for the White Sox, and talk about a meteoric rise over the last season or so. Less than that, if you want to consider the fact that Sean Burke really, he's got 19 major league innings on his resume, right? They were 19 very excellent innings last year. He struck out 22 batters, had a 1.42 ERA, a whip of one. So you can see why, based on what Sean Burke showed last season, why the White Sox tabbed him as their opening day starter. But I've been talking a lot here on White Sox Weekly over the last couple months about how it felt like someone like Martin Perez, or the veteran who the Sox signed in the offseason, or potentially somebody like Jonathan Cannon, although based on his spring training, you could see why he wasn't really in the mix, or even Davis Martin, who has done a lot adding that kick change and has shown a lot of development. So there were a lot of possibilities here for the White Sox, and even though I think most people assumed that Sean Burke was going to be in the rotation, being the opening day starter felt a little bit like that was something that could be, you know, on the outside, not necessarily something that would be in the mix for this season. And just to let you know how rare what Sean Burke is going to be doing is, he becomes just the seventh pitcher in the last 100 years who will get the opening day start with less than 20 innings on his resume. Think about that. The last person to actually do it, Fernando Valenzuela back in 1981. And by the way, if you're somebody who's a little bit younger, go read up on the season that Fernando Valenzuela had in 1981. It was the summer of Fernando. So go check that out if you're unfamiliar with it. But now, that's a high bar for Sean Burke to reach. I don't think we're going to be, comparing Burke to Fernando Valenzuela this year. But you know what? I'm not going to put any restrictions on the guy. Let's see what he's actually capable of. Chris Getz joined Chuck Garfine on the White Sox Talk podcast this week and talked about how the decision to name Sean Burke the starter came about.
It's ongoing conversation. You know, coming into spring training, we didn't have, you know, our target on one guy. It was just, that was the makeup of our group as we're, you know, forming, you know, a pitching staff, whether it be starters or relievers, quite honestly. And, you know, Sean Burke had some really quality starts for us when he got this opportunity last year. I recall the game that he pitched in San Diego as San Diego was, you know, fighting for a playoff position, sold out crowd, and let alone just a very, you know, what could be, it could have been a very challenging lineup, and he pitched great.
Yeah, six innings, two hits.
Yeah, he was excellent that day, and you know, he's a guy that, you know, personally and others we've got some history with. He's been the organization. You know, he was really coming on strong, had some injuries that set him back. And so, you know, when he finally made his way back, it was no surprise because the talent was there. It was just, you know, a bit of a gap because of the injury setbacks. But, you know, he's very capable. We've got a handful of guys that probably could have gotten the nod, felt most comfortable with Sean Burke. And as you're, you know, looking at the schedule with the Angels, the Twins and the Tigers, and, you know, trying to put our best foot forward for the first couple series, you know, those were factors that went into the decision. But excited about Sean Burke kicking it off.
Chris Getz, White Sox general manager there with Chuck Garfine on the White Sox Talk podcast earlier this week. As I mentioned, Sean Burke, 25 years old, the Worcester, Mass native, will get the start for the White Sox on opening day. He was a third-round pick by the White Sox in 2021, and it's been, you know, out of Maryland, it's been a meteoric rise for him over the last 6 months or so. So very happy for him and very excited for what he brings to the table. He can hit 98 miles per hour. He's actually hit 99 in the past. I know he's mentioned that the Century Club is something he's looking to maybe achieve at some point in his career here, the elusive 100 on the radar gun. We'll see if he actually does that. Probably not going to happen on Thursday on opening day, but you know, the adrenaline's going to be flowing, so maybe, just maybe, you never know. But because it's going to be cold, I'd be a little bit surprised if he actually ends up doing that. Brian Bannister had a good quote on Sean Burke. He said, quote, "He really had such a strong finish to last year, and when you stand next to him, there's no doubt about his physicality. He has tree trunks for legs. He's a physical guy." So a lot of potential here for Sean Burke, and cannot wait to see him opening day on the mound for the White Sox. Some more news. Not so good in regards to what the White Sox are dealing with in regards to injury. Josh Rojas, who I think a lot of people have tabbed as a potential starter at shortstop with Colson Montgomery having been sent down last week. It doesn't seem likely to be the case on opening day. Rojas was in a walking boot earlier this week with a hairline stress fracture in his right big toe. Now, he has not been ruled out yet. And I guess it's going to be based on his pain tolerance. So we shall see if Josh Rojas begins the season on the active roster or if he hits the injured list. If he does, I wouldn't anticipate it'll be too long, but it does put shortstop up in flux a little bit. Maybe someone like Chase Mydroth could be your opening day starter for the White Sox. Now, Andrew Benintendi, who's been dealing with that non-displaced fracture in his pinky finger. Now, initially, I was not completely optimistic about Benintendi being in the opening day lineup because of the 4 to 6 week timeline when he suffered the injury. But Andrew Benintendi is hell-bent on beating that timeline. He was back facing live pitching earlier this week, and he talked about how he feels.
I feel pretty good. You know, I feel like I kind of checked a lot of boxes. Hit a few off the end. No issues there. So happy with it. Obviously, the results weren't there, but I felt pretty good.
So defense in the field tomorrow? Is that the plan?
I'm not sure. I haven't even talked to him yet, but I'm going to go in the backfield today, get a few at-bats, and then roll into tomorrow.
Would you be okay starting the year if you were the DH for at least for a little bit, if that's how it rolled for you?
If that's how it plays out, yeah. As long as I'm out there, that's all I really care about. So I think getting a few games in left field would be nice before we leave, but we'll see how it goes.
How many at-bats do you really need to get ready for spring training?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think you come out 10 for 10, you're good with 10 at-bats, and you know, you go 0 for 10, you think you need 50, 100, so kind of depends.
Exactly. It's supposed to be in the 40s on opening day. Is that a concern for you, just to make sure you're keeping your hand warm?
I think everybody will be a little cold, so I think the adrenaline will take over. I don't think anybody will be feeling it much.
What's the pain level like now, or discomfort? What are you kind of dealing with? Nothing?
I think comfortable enough to where I'm not thinking about it when I'm hitting. So, and every day I'll get a little better. So, I'm sure till that 4 or 6 week mark, there might be a little pain there, but it's not too bad.
And there's no, they've told you like there's not a big chance of doing anything more to it if you push it a little bit here at this point.
Yeah, no, I think structurally they said it's great. The only thing would be if I got hit on the hand again.
Yeah.
Would not be good, but I got to wear that hand guard now. See how, hopefully it doesn't have to be used, but I got that there.
So sounds like Andrew Benintendi could actually be in the opening day lineup for the White Sox on Thursday at Wright Field. We shall see how it progresses, but that is certainly encouraging from what the initial timeline was. Some not-so-encouraging news. Drew Thorpe, the White Sox pitcher, suffered a setback this week. The elbow problems keep creeping up on the White Sox. The latest came Thursday morning at Camelback Ranch, where Thorpe exited a minor league game with soreness. From Venable, quote, sounds like some discomfort of the elbow. We'll evaluate it and likely do some imaging and see where we're at. So, of course, that is not great, but that is the reality of pitching in baseball. It is not the most natural of motions, so frequently you're going to be dealing with that. That's why you need depth. You need plenty of pitching depth in your organization if you're going to make it through a season. Somebody who will be providing some depth, at least it appears to be that way, is Mike Clevinger. The White Sox signed him. It was not a guaranteed major league contract in the offseason, but they've brought him back, and he's had a really nice spring training. 4 scoreless relief innings, has looked dominant at times. Clevinger talked about the transition to the bullpen and about the possibility of maybe even closing games out for Will Venable in the 9th.
I feel good. I mean, again, this is kind of the first time I've been healthy in a long time, and just finally have like my body back, which has been, you know, promising.
Yeah, but you're also not pitching like a starter. You're going, you know, on different days now. How is that? What kind of adjustment is that for you to be a bullpen guy versus a starter every 5 days?
Yeah, it's just been ironing out the routine and the throwing in between, figuring out how to get my lifts in without, you know, taxing my body. So but we've done a good job. I had a lot of help from Wise and even talking to some other guys that have done this. And so it's been a pretty good adjustment.
Who have you talked to? Do you mind me asking?
Oh, I'm not going to pick everyone's brains. Just done this for a while. You know, I've talked to Wilson's been doing this for a minute. So I talked to him about how he goes about with, like someone said, like, you know, getting high, getting 2 outs. And like today with Wise, it was like, oh, he's kind of getting ready really fast. And Savali had a long inning. So then it's kind of, you know, mitigating that, like how many throws I'm going to do in between, but to still stay hot, but not overtax my arm.
You're starting to look forward to getting into an actual, like, save situation, right? I mean, is that something you got to
I mean, if that's the role you put me, I'm focused on making the team. I'm here on the NRI, so yeah. I just really want to make the team and go to Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything different on the mound, mentality-wise, whether it's, like, using all your stuff right out of the gate or how you attack hitters?
No, when I'm doing really well as a starter, it's going to happen, that closer mentality, but I kind of get lost in the mix because I feel like you have to be a little more cerebral as a starter and just thinking about how I'm setting this guy up, and then sometimes that spirals into thinking about mechanics. I feel like it's just, as a reliever, it's been really easy to get back in the flow state where I'm just kind of like, all I have to worry about is getting 3 outs right here. So, that's been fun.
So there you go, Mike Clevinger. Would not be surprised at all if he ends up being the man in the pen who gets the first crack at closing out games for the White Sox. A savvy veteran who no doubt seems like he would be somebody who might thrive in that role, have that mentality to come in and close out games. So we shall see. He's had a sterling spring so far for the White Sox. I'm Jeff Miller. This is White Sox Weekly. We played for you the Sean Burke video where he was given the news by Will Venable and Ethan Katz about being named the opening day starter. Let's go deeper with Sean Burke. I'll ask him what it's like having been named the White Sox starter. And also, let's dig into a little bit about his college alum, Maryland. They are in the NCAA tournament. Let's ask him how he fills out his bracket. All that coming your way next. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly
on the home of the Chicago White Sox,
ESPN 1000.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000, your home of the Chicago White Sox. I'm Jeff Meller. Pleased to be joined by your opening day White Sox starter. That's right. It is Sean Burke. And Sean, as I say those words, we're under a week away now from you getting the ball at Raitt Field. Has it sunk in at all?
It's sunk in a little bit for me. I think I have my last spring training outing today, later this afternoon. I think once that's over and I start my prep for that first game, then it will kind of start being a little bit more real for me. But day by day, it's starting to settle in a little bit more.
No doubt about it. And a lot of White Sox fans will be in attendance watching that one. Pretty excited for you. Now, the accomplishment, you know, you're going to be, I saw this stat, the one of just seven, you'll be the seventh person to get the opening day nod, having thrown less than 20 innings in their career in the last 100 years. So quite a significant jump from, you know, making your way to the majors last year, getting a chance to make three starts, four appearances, and then to come on and be the opening day starter for the White Sox. As you were going through the offseason, Sean, did you have any type of goal, any type of realistic expectation as an elite level athlete? Hey, let me make this something that I can shoot for. Was that even in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying if I said it wasn't in the back of my mind, just knowing that, you know, we'd kind of be coming into camp with a staff of guys who were, you know, other than Martin, have relatively been kind of inexperienced. Obviously, I'm the most inexperienced out of the entire staff, but just generally most guys only kind of being in the league for about a year or two. I knew there was maybe a possibility. It wasn't something that I was fixated on going into camp. You know, my main goal coming into camp was put together a bunch of solid outings and, you know, show these guys that I can continue to do this at a high level. And my main priority was just making the team and making the rotation. And obviously the opening day nod is just kind of a bonus, a little cherry on top of that. But, you know, my main focus coming in was just getting ready for the season and then showing these guys I can keep doing what I was doing at the end of last year.
No doubt about it. Sean Burke joining us here on White Sox Weekly. So, Sean, you know, we do the show, you know, once a week, and I've spent a lot of time here in spring training talking about you. Last, maybe 2 weeks ago, Jeff Passan, ESPN MLB Insider, had an extensive article where he had a nugget on each team regarding what he's hearing from scouts. And you were the focus for the White Sox, how you had been turning heads all spring training long. So obviously it's something that not just the White Sox, but the league-wide has noticed. I'm just curious, you know, how was it different for you this offseason? You know, I know you've dealt with some shoulder issues in the past. So how was it different for you this offseason, you know, finishing September strong and then knowing that you had, you know, in all likelihood, as long as you continue to do what you were doing, a real shot to make the rotation?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it makes the offseason a little bit easier. And I think I learned a lot going through those shoulder injuries and kind of dealing with that about how to take care of my body, what I need to do, you know, from a scheduling perspective, prep perspective, PT, all that stuff, just to make sure my body's feeling 100%. And, you know, I think going through an experience like that is going to make me better for the long run. Like this offseason, I was super dialed in with what I needed to do in the training room, like working with my PT 3-4 times a week, and just making sure we're getting out in front of any shoulder stuff or any arm stuff that's going on. And, you know, knock on wood, up until this point, I felt great. So, I think another big thing was just knowing kind of where I was at last year. Like, I got a little bit of a taste of the big leagues and know what I needed to prepare for. I was able to see what was working, what, you know, things I could change and make better to yield better results. So I think just having that concrete data, the concrete numbers of knowing what I need to work towards was super helpful, just giving me some direction for the offseason.
Sean Burke joining us here on White Sox Weekly. Sean, do you have any good rapport? I know, one of the strengths of the White Sox organization, based on everything we've seen and read, is that, you know, the catching depth is really, there's a lot there. So do you have any great rapport with anyone individually? Is there anybody who we should be keep an eye out for a potential opening day battery mate for you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, I really only threw to Corey and Edgar last year, and both of them not a ton, honestly, because Edgar was in Birmingham for a little bit of the year. I was able to throw with him in Charlotte before I got called up for maybe about a month and a half or so, and I think he ended up dealing with a little bit of some back stuff, if I can remember correctly, at the end of the year. And then throwing with Corey, my first game in the big leagues was the first time I ever thrown with Corey, and I think just in a short time with those two guys, like, I've already establish a really good relationship with both of them. I think we work well together. You know, we're friends. We talk outside of baseball, so I think that's always something that's good for a pitcher and catcher. And then the new guys coming in, like Theis, I've just started throwing to this spring, and you know, we've already had a relationship and starting to become friends and just learning each other both off the field, on the field. So I think everybody wants to gain kind of the trust of each other in the pitcher-catcher relationship, and I feel like both the pitchers and the catchers are working hard to ensure that, you know, we're all on the same page come opening day. As far as, you know, who's going to be catching opening day, that's not up to me. That's up to Venable. So I'm not going to answer that one, but, you know, I'll be good with whoever they put out there.
Look at it. You're a savvy vet already, Sean. I love it. Sean Burke joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Okay, so, you know, this is, you know, 2025. This is the era we live in. I mean, an unbelievable achievement for you to get the news that you're the opening day starter. But we're living in a social media world, Sean. And so, of course, you know, it was pretty cool to watch. I played it before you came on here in the first segment. But, you know, Will, giving you the news that you were getting the, you know, the opening day nod, I'm just curious because, like, anytime someone gets some, you know, huge, a huge achievement, the big news, oftentimes it's not recorded and then, you know, sent out for everybody to see. So I'm just curious, in that moment as it's happening, I'm sure there was, you know, it was pretty cool. But then were there waves of emotion that came afterwards when you walk out of the meeting room and you're like, you know what? Wow, this really happened. I'm going to be the opening day starter.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't even think I really felt that wave of emotion until I got my car and I was driving home from the complex that day. Like, you know, I got the news, obviously, and then kind of just went back to doing what I was doing that day, getting my work in. And the guys, the rest of the rotation had already kind of gotten wind of it, so you know, they all congratulated me. They were super supportive. And then yeah, like I said, I mean, I think getting back into my car and driving home was really when it hit me, like, wow, like this is really happening.
That's pretty cool. I have to imagine you've received quite a few requests to be in the stands for the opening day start.
How are you
dealing with that?
I have a group of friends coming out from home, obviously some family stuff coming out, so I'm trying to accommodate everybody as best as I can. Just because this is a special moment for me, but it's also a special moment for all those people that, you know, have been with me since the start of this. You know, I've said it so many times, like, I wouldn't be here without my family. I wouldn't be here without my teammates I've had, my coaches. So, it's truly a group effort to get me to where I'm at. And I'm just trying to take care of those guys as much as I can. You know, maybe not the guys that I haven't talked to in 10 years that are now wanting tickets, but my guys that have been riding with me from the start, I'm going to try to take care of them. So, this will actually be the first game some of those guys have seen me play since high school. So it'll be a special day.
No, that's pretty awesome. Now, the one thing that you are familiar with, but they may not be, having, you know, not like been in Chicago day in and day out, especially in what will be not even April, but it's going to be March 27th here. So, and I know that Will noted it in the video there that you're used to pitching in the cold. You went to Maryland, so you're familiar with the cold weather. You ready for a potential, you know, 30, 40-degree day?
Yeah, 100%. I'm from Massachusetts. I've been dealing with this since I was, you know, started playing baseball. I promise you this won't be the coldest game I've pitched in. I promise you this won't be the last game that I pitch in that's cold. So, I mean, that's kind of just the price of playing in Chicago. And, you know, once you kind of get going and get loose, like, I don't think the weather will be too much of a factor for me.
Sean, now you're listed at 6'6". I have to imagine you've played a little bit of basketball in your day, right?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Okay, so having gone to Maryland, we're in the middle of March Madness, right? Do you feel obligated, if you're filling out a bracket, to put Maryland into winning it all? Or what's your bracket approach, having you know, as a Maryland guy?
So I have a couple different brackets. I made one bracket with them winning it all, of course. And then I made another one. I think I'm in a group with some of my buddies, some of my teammates. I think I have them going to either the Final Four or the Elite Eight. I think they're matched up with Florida, and I think in one of them I had Florida beating them, and one of the other ones I had Maryland beating Florida. So I don't know. Who knows? They're playing right now. Or they're playing today when I'm pitching, so I won't really be able to watch it, but I'm pulling for them.
No doubt about it. Another minute with Sean Burke here on ESPN 1000 White Sox Weekly. All right, Sean, so I'm just curious because, you know, this is going to be a pretty cool season for you no matter what, I have to imagine. But, you know, unfortunately, last year happened. It was a rough one for the White Sox. And I heard you talk about just expectations and how that's something that doesn't bother you. You welcome that. Tell me a little bit about what you think it's like. You're going to be the lead dog on the mound on opening day. And I just found it fascinating that you kind of embraced the idea of, hey, we're going to turn this thing around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like I said, like I grew up outside of Boston. So if you want to talk kind of ruthless sports fans and fans that have high expectations of their teams, like, you know, I grew up being one of those people. So the fans of Chicago are no different. Like, they have high expectations for their sports teams. You know, it's a blue-collar city that has a history of success, and you know, I don't think anybody on our team is numb to that, and we all understand that it's kind of in our hands to start turning this thing back around and putting a good product on the field, both for ourselves and our organization, but also for these fans that come out to the games and support us.
All right, Sean. Well, we will be in attendance watching. No doubts, I have a lot of faith that the future is very bright for you. So congrats, my man. Can't wait to see you on opening day at Ray Field.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Jeff.
That was Sean Burke, who I had a chance to catch up with on Friday afternoon before his final spring training warm-up. That is why we were unaware of the result of the Maryland Terrapins game. Hey, Sox fans, bring your family to the ballpark with a family pack presented by ExxonMobil. Starting at just $19, each family member gets one ticket, hot dog, drink, bag of chips, cookie, plus a souvenir 125th anniversary water bottle. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. All right, there was plenty more interesting stuff from Chris Getz on the White Sox Talk podcast that I want you to hear. And also, I focused a lot about Sean Burke with his huge achievement. Another member of the White Sox might have had an even bigger one. I'll share that with you coming up next.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Jeff Meller back with you here on White Sox Weekly, your home of the Chicago White Sox, ESPN 1000. So 10 months ago, Shane Smith was an undrafted 24-year-old reliever at Class AA, and now he is a starting pitcher with the White Sox. Maybe I'm getting a little ahead of myself when I say starting pitcher, but I do think, even though it's not official just yet, it feels like Shane Smith has that inside track on the fifth rotation spot. Nevertheless, though, he is going to be a member of the White Sox pitching staff. And as a Rule 5 draft pick, the first pick in the Rule 5 draft this past season, the White Sox had the decision. You either, when you draft a player in the Rule 5 draft, they have to spend the entire season on your roster, or they will be sent back to the team that you selected them from. And that, of course, was the Milwaukee Brewers. Shane Smith, though, who can touch 98 on the gun, is somebody who has a lot of promise, and he was given the news that he did indeed make the White Sox roster earlier this week.
A lot of tears for my mom, and I think a little tears for my dad, which is new. But yeah, they're so happy for me and excited.
Were you confident this was going to happen, given your situation, the way you pitched the sixth inning? They had to keep you.
Yeah, I think with Rule 5 guys, you never really know. I think I put my best foot forward the ball really well when I was out there, but you know, you never know what decisions he's made. But I felt pretty good.
So there you go, a little bit from Shane Smith, who, you know, again, as I mentioned, it's pretty cool when you get the news that you're going to be in the majors, and I would anticipate that he will probably spend the season on the White Sox roster. I wouldn't imagine, with the potential live arm that he has, they would want to send him back to the Brewers unless an absolute disaster strikes. So I imagine he will be a member of the White Sox staff and probably the rotation for the season, and they'll move forward after that. Chris Getz, the man who will ultimately be responsible for making that decision, joined Chuck Garfine on the White Sox Talk podcast earlier this week, and a lot of good stuff there. If you didn't catch it, make sure you go ahead and check out the podcast in its entirety, but a couple of clips that caught my ear that I wanted to share with you. Chuck did a great interview. He asked Chris Getz specifically why he believes that this rebuild will be different.
Well, you know, I think you look at the pitching that we've been able to develop and the depth of it. you know, and now we're beginning to balance out the roster, really, you know, throughout the organization with position players like, you know, Kyle Teal, Braden Montgomery, Chase Mydroth. We've got Colson Montgomery, you know, in Q, in AAA. We've got, you know, Edgar Caro, you know, Brian Ramos, Miguel Vargas. So, you know, there's a longer list of position players than where we were a year ago, and feel really good about, you know, the potential of a really strong rotation, with probably leading off with a Noah Schultz and a Hagen Smith, and have some others that we're really impressed with. And Grant Taylor has had a fantastic spring and has shown us glimpses of being a really potential effective, impactful major league pitcher. So how is it going to be different? Listen, we're focused on doing the best we can with the group that we have and continuing to add talent, develop these guys to go out there and play winning baseball.
Now, undoubtedly, the strength of the White Sox organization right now is the pitching. I've talked about it a lot so far this year. You know, Noah Schultz, Hagen Smith, they're the prizes, of course, but Grant Taylor, Sean Burke, now Shane Smith, a lot of really interesting arms in the White Sox system here that you can get excited about. But how is the offense going to be better this season, Chris?
Systematically, you bring in a Ryan Fuller to centralize our hitting development, you know, very similar to what we did on the pitching side with Brian Bannister. And you know, the idea of bringing in a Ryan Fuller wasn't about just improving our 2025 offense. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you want that to be a byproduct of having the right processes in place, and, you know, but it helping on, you know, just really having a consistent message from top down, but really helping the acquisition front as well, and identifying, you know, hitters in the draft or free agency that we feel like can be successful in the structure that we have here. So why do I think we're going to be better? I think that there's a fair amount of balance in the lineup, some platoon advantages that we can create. We've got some guys that historically have, you know, put together some really, you know, consistent, solid at-bats. You know, we don't really have, you know, a let's say a long list of, you know, home run hitting, power hitting types, but that doesn't mean that we can't put together an offense that can score more runs. So, yeah, I mean, we're still going to have to be creative. There's going to be times where we're a bit frustrated and we want more, but it's certainly just part of the process, and we feel pretty good from a structure standpoint.
Now, I think White Sox fans, one of the questions when you hear about that process is, can this offense possibly be better if Luis Robert is not part of it? He's been the name that, you know, the one star name still on the White Sox roster right now that a lot of other major league teams have been inquiring about. Chuck Garfine asked Chris Getz, has anything come close in regards to a Luis Robert trade?
I wouldn't say anything's gotten real close. I mean, plenty of interest, you know,
even now in spring.
Yeah, there's been plenty of teams that have checked in. We're not highly motivated just because we know the talent that Luis Robert is, and last year was not a fair, you know, assessment on who he is as a player. You know, a year prior he was a 5-win player. Last year, you know, he missed so much time, was out of sorts, just really didn't find his groove. This spring training, you know, he's alive. He is. He's had some really good at bats, and I don't mean just the ones that, you know, he's driving the baseball. He's laying off some tough pitches and some pitches that he wasn't laying off last year. So, you know, looking for him to maintain that discipline. Obviously, he's got some power in the bat, and we know what he can do on the defensive side. So we're believers in him. We are, you know, so we're just really happy where he's at. And, you know, if conversations continue, which they probably will, we'll have those conversations. But there hasn't been a match yet.
What do you think is a fair return for Robert?
Yeah, I guess we'll find out someday if we decide to move him. But, you know, he's a guy that can be an all-star. You know, he can. So, you know, we're going to treat him as such.
Sneaky Chuck Garfine there trying to get Chris Getz to throw out a price tag on Luis Robert. Of course, Chris Getz would not take the bait. nor should he. We shall see. That obviously is going to be a storyline that is something we are following all year long here on White Sox Weekly. Chris Getz talked about attitude and makeup and how it's become an important part of them and the evaluation process when they're trying to add some of these younger players going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's vital, to find types that really understand what winning baseball is, and it is an attitude, it's an intent, and that starts with the preparation and the focus to go out there and execute. And you know, I think I look at the return on Garrett Crochet, as we talked about, the different concepts with other clubs. And what made us really comfortable was we had done so much work on a Kyle Teal and a Braden Montgomery because they were recent draft picks. So we got to know the makeup of the player, and we knew what we were getting, so to speak, in understanding how they go about things and their desire to win baseball games, not just selfish play or someone that just really doesn't live it. So that's part of our calculus for sure. I mean, we're looking at guys that certainly have a major league skill set to help win ball games, but an attitude and guys that just love to play, that are locked in defensively, make good base running decisions, quality teammates, all those things go into creating a winning baseball team, and look forward to seeing how this whole thing rolls out in the minor leagues this year, and certainly getting some more players to the big leagues and seeing what our major league guys can do as well.
When you hear Chris Getz say those things, it does sound like the intangibles are something that the White Sox are trying to place more to be more on top of what is out there when it comes to the intangibles of the players and what that actually does, how that could actually result in some winning baseball. Chris Getz on the White Sox Talk podcast with Chuck Garfine also talked about the Miguel Vargas trade last year. Now, that's something that a lot of people, when you consider Eric Fetty, Michael Kopech, and Tommy Pham, were all involved in that deal, and the closest piece to the majors was Miguel Vargas coming back. Chuck Garfine asked Chris to talk about that trade return.
Certainly when you're behind the scenes, you understand the market better than anyone. Miguel Vargas, for example, was someone that we believed in, we continue to believe in, and obviously when he came over in the trade last year, he wasn't himself. You know, it's never easy. It's rarely easy to change organizations, especially for a young kid who's grown up in one. It's at the tail end of the year. Physically, he was a little bit worn down. We challenged him this offseason to come in a lot stronger, and I'm proud of him because he's done that. And the adjustments that we were tasking him with, or he was trying to do, it was hard for him because he physically, wasn't in a position to do it. So he's had a really good spring training. He's getting to a velocity. He's driving the ball to both sides of the field. So we valued him highly.
A lot of teams actually did.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. No, he's got a, he had a pretty good following in because of his track record. And so, valuing Miguel Vargas was, and to be able to acquire a bat like we feel like his offense can become, was important for us. So, and then we, got some additional pieces just to create depth in the organization that we feel like have some ceiling, and look forward to seeing how that plays out. Been around long enough that the how it's evaluated when the trade is executed is rarely right. Been part of plenty of trades where everyone's high-fiving and everyone's, saying it's an excellent trade, and then it doesn't work out. And years down the road, doesn't look like a great deal. So you've got to have your process. You got to stick to it. And we continue to believe in the moves that we've made. To truly evaluate a trade, unfortunately, sometimes it takes 10 years, if not more, to understand, and let a career play out. So, we feel like we've really added talent to this organization where our farm system was, a year ago to where it is now. We feel like we're in a much better place, and we're towards the top in baseball, and we're going to continue to feed that and develop that and look for ways to get better.
Now, if you're a skeptical White Sox fan and you're just thinking, okay, that's Chris Getz justifying his deal, I will point out that Miguel Vargas has looked like a different player since arriving to spring training. Looks like he, you know, he took that challenge that the organization gave him to make sure that he came back stronger and ready, and he does seem like he's done that. I'll remind you, if you missed it last week, I let you hear from both Will Venable and Andrew Vaughn, who completely unrelated at different points, the first name out of their mouth in terms of who was somebody that was surprising them so far this spring, both the manager and the longtime vet, Andrew Vaughn, both named Miguel Vargas first. So hopefully we can see a much better season from Miguel Vargas now that he's had the opportunity to really, you know, get himself into the White Sox organization and get past, you know, being traded from a very good team at the end of last season, a very good team that I'm going to touch on here in the next segment. But before we do that, one more thing that I wanted you to hear, maybe the most exciting thing that came out of the interview with Chris Getz that Chuck Garfine did on the White Sox Talk podcast was when Chuck asked Chris, is there any chance that we could see both Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith debut in the majors this year?
Yeah, I could see a scenario in which that happens. That's not the focus. It really isn't. It's about those guys being able to take the mound on a normal rotation, in a normal rotation in the near future. I mean, that's what I've tasked our staff to do is get these guys ready. And you know, if they happen to you know come up to the big leagues this year, that's great. But we're going to do it at an appropriate time that makes sense for those players in the organization.
So that could be some pretty exciting developments on the South side later this year. The two top left-handed pitching prospects in all of baseball, Chris Getz didn't rule out the chance that they could make their debut this season. Hey, Sox fans, head to the ballpark next Saturday, March 29th, as the White Sox take on the Angels at 1:10 p.m. The first 15,000 fans in attendance will receive a 1907 replica jersey presented by Rush. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. All right. I've been talking all about White Sox opening day. We've already had two major league games in the books. And you have to ask yourself, was a home run that occurred in that game actually a home run? Talk about it next here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
2-2 pitch, and he sends one deep. Up towards right center field, back at the wall, and it is off the very top of the wall. Nearly a home run. And now they're going to rule it perhaps as a home run. It is. They kept it in play for a moment, but Ohtani cranks one out, and he gives the fans what they've been waiting for, his first of the year.
That was Adam Amin on the call of Shohei Ohtani's home run in Game 2 of the Tokyo Series on FS1. Little home cooking, if you ask me, as even though the Cubs were the home team, they were clearly in Dodgers country in Japan. This past week, Ohtani, what would probably have been a ground rule double in almost any other scenario, he has a home run ruled there. And I had Adam Amin on with Tom Waddle earlier this week, actually that day, and I asked him if he believed that Ohtani was indeed a benefit of some home cooking.
The natural inclination is to think that. I kind of lean that way. It's game, you know, we said this towards the end of the game, like as big as this is for, you know, the city of Tokyo, for the country of Japan, for Ohtani and Imanaga and the five Japanese players that got a chance to be there, it's still 2 out of 162, you know, these two games. And that's kind of what it felt like. It's like, you know, let's make this moment what we would like it to be. I don't think it's a conspiracy theory. I just think that's how it ended up playing out. Kind of what you guys felt feels right. Again, I don't know if that's true or not. It feels that way. That doesn't necessarily make it true, but it feels that way.
Nevertheless, it provided a great moment for baseball fans. Dodgers 2-0 on the year. Cubs 0-2. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Hey, White Sox fans, join us for Kids Opening Day next Sunday, March 30th, and kick off the 2025 season with a day full of fun. Enjoy an on-field pregame parade, face painters, balloon artists, poster design stations, southpaw appearances, and more. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. That's going to do it for me of this week on this week's edition of White Sox Weekly, folks. Don't go anywhere. We've got Odds Couple coming up next. And, of course, White Sox spring training baseball coming your way at 3 o'clock. Thanks to my man Eric Ostrowski for producing and for Brendan Riley, the executive producer of White Sox Baseball. This is ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
White Sox Weekly.
On Chicago's home for sports.
On the ESPN Chicago app. 100.3 HD2 and ESPN 1000.